The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
This episode is brought to you by my friend Rebecca Walzer, a financial expert who can help you protect your wealth. Book your free call with her team by going to friendofdinesh.com. That's friendofdinesh.com. Hey, everyone. I'm Danielle D'Souza Gill, your host for this week. I'm so happy to be here and have been having so much fun on the show. There are some really exciting things going on at Twitter. All kinds of censorship is being lifted. So we're going to talk all about that. And if you are wondering what other content I put out regularly, you can find me on social media. Of course, I'm going to mention today my Twitter handle, at Danielle D'Souza G, because Gill was too long of a handle. So you start typing my name, Danielle D'Souza Gill, and it comes up. Twitter had some amazing glory days. I still think back to when President Trump retweeted me 4 times in a row, which was amazing. He even left the tweets at the top of his Twitter for hours. He retweeted me doing an interview on Fox at the time about how women were supporting Trump in record numbers and his approval rating was high. He also retweeted me later when I went on with Lara Trump. So those were the glory days of Twitter. And I still relish in thinking about what an awesome place Twitter was. And I really hope those days are coming back because Twitter will be so much more fun when we can all feel like we can speak freely and engage with each other. And dare I say, I hope Trump comes back on the platform. I know he was reinstated, but he has not tweeted. I really do hope he comes back because he would make it so much more fun. I have a Truth Social account I also use. I'm literally just at Danielle on Truth Social because I made my account really early on in the app. So I love both apps, but I would just love to have Trump on Twitter. So Trump, if you're listening, I hope you join because Twitter and True Social are great platforms. So today we're going to dive into this in more detail. This is the Dinesh D'Souza podcast.
America needs this voice. The times are crazy. In a time of confusion, division, and lies, we need a brave voice of reason, understanding, and truth. This is the Dinesh D'Souza Podcast.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, and I'm excited to bring you my biggest bedding sale ever, just in time for Christmas. Get my Giza Dream bed sheets for as low as $29.98. A set of pillowcases, only $9.98. Rejuvenate your bed with a MyPillow mattress topper for as low as $99.99. We also have blankets in a variety of sizes, colors, and styles. We even have blankets for your pets. Get duvets, quilts, down comforters, body pillows, bolster pillows, and so much more, all at the biggest discounts ever. I know my bedding products are perfect for you, and I'm extending my money-back guarantee for Christmas until March 1st, 2023, making them the perfect gifts for your friends, your family, and everyone you know. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code and you'll get huge discounts on all MyPillow bedding products, including my Giza Dream bed sheets, for as low as $29.98. Get all your shopping done now while quantities last.
In physical training, there are certain techniques for developing strength and endurance. If used properly, tools such as ankle weights and weighted vests can be useful for that very purpose. The idea is to provide extra resistance to normal movement. When you take off the weights, your body is not only stronger, but it feels lighter. A similar thing has happened recently in the world of information and discourse, and we all have Elon Musk to thank for it. For years, conservatives and anyone who wanted to challenge the oppressive narratives of the establishment have had to work twice as hard to make their voices heard. We've had to go to alternative social media sites, find new ways to put videos online or books into publication, and in some instances, had to develop our own web forums or technology to enable payments. In terms of open and public online debate, conservatives have spent the past 6 years or so essentially underground. This is not so much a complaint as it is a statement of fact. Like working out with extra weights makes you stronger, the added difficulty has led to a number of extraordinary developments. When conservative metal was tested, we rose to the occasion and made some incredible advancements. One example would be distributed networks that can't be shut down by zealous governments or banks. We also developed new techniques for getting the conservative message across. It's widely recognized, for example, that conservatives excel in both humor and political memes. At the same time, pundits and thought leaders on the right have become extremely skilled in debate, a field we traditionally fared very well in, has now become an area where conservatives absolutely dominate. So now that Twitter is in the hands of Elon Musk and he is rolling back years of leftist bigotry, conservatives are re-entering the field looking like technically accomplished veteran verbal combatants. Meanwhile, for the past few years, the exact opposite has been happening on the left. Instead of engaging in debate, they were more than happy to run conservative speakers out of town with threats of violence. They also censor and cancel anyone who they even remotely disagree with. The left grew so used to always having their way in the public space that this made them much weaker intellectually. They're shocked at the fact that they might have to actually abide by Twitter's terms of service now. They can't instigate violence. Andy Ngo, who's been physically attacked, had reported threats of violence to Twitter made by members of Antifa, and Twitter did nothing. But now that Elon Musk is at the helm, he's assured Andy that this will no longer be allowed. The left is so used to be able to getting away with anything while we tiptoe around them. But the tables have turned. Now the left is fearful. In preparation for the midterms, many noticed that Democrat candidates always ran from the debates. And when they were successfully coaxed onto stage, they fared horribly. Yet their campaigns managed their social media and put up a facade on the ground. This might be more difficult for the left to pull off in the future now. We already see that Trump, who has been reinstated onto Twitter, has more followers on Twitter than Joe Biden, even though Trump isn't actually tweeting. He has continued to only post on Truth Social. The savage and brute force tactics of oppression enjoyed by leftists and their aligned mega corporations and banks has had a counterintuitive effect, an effect akin to using performance-enhancing drugs. They reaped short-term gains, but at the expense of developing natural talent. Now that their supply has been effectively cut off and they have to share a level playing field, they are floundering. They don't know how to behave when the game isn't fixed in their favor. This doesn't necessarily mean that Twitter is now a conservative echo chamber or that it has become an arm of the GOP. Absolutely not. You can still find all sorts of skirmishes as well as subworlds within Twitter, but it does mean that conservatives finally have a chance to offer counterarguments of their own without being censored. For such a seemingly small change, it's turning out to be a really big deal. Before this, we had Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Google, and YouTube all censoring us. Now that one of those has allowed us to speak, it puts a dent in their house of cards. The fact that Elon Musk is now running Twitter is a far bigger blow to the establishment than any political victory during the midterms could have been. AOC's head is already exploding, and Elon Musk is loving it. Twitter before Musk was a carefully curated Potemkin village, a false facade that maintained the appearance of leftist thought dominance through the wholesale erasure of conservatives. Since ownership has changed, there has already been a major change in the types of topics and opinions trending on the site. More people are talking openly and freely about things like medical data and other topics that can still get you banned off of sites like YouTube. Topics which, incidentally, I am more free to cover on my show Counterculture on Epic TV. So if you're interested in what it sounds like when I don't pull punches, I recommend you check it out. And speaking of forbidden topics, Musk has prioritized removing hashtags in accounts associated with a certain type of child-related criminal activity, a move that pre-Musk Twitter was suspiciously lax about. Looking at all these changes, the release of unfairly banned conservatives from Twitter jail, fighting a pernicious type of crime it once tolerated, and allowing a more organic flow to trending topics, it's clear to see how the site was curated previously. And fortunately, many of those long-haired, censorship-loving 20-year-olds have been fired from Twitter. As Musk confirmed to my dad and others, the suppression was entirely one-sided. Not one leftist account was given a lifetime ban, even when those accounts were spreading some of the biggest lies. The phenomenon of Twitter's Potemkin Village, then, is very apt. Just as the phrase described as a particular Soviet practice of hiding the blight of communism from foreign eyes, so too was Twitter's echo chamber an invention of leftist totalitarianism. Twitter has been an invaluable aid to the left. Unlike the mainstream media and news corporations, Twitter presented itself as a kind of middle ground where the average user could react directly with pundits, politicians, and the press. And many writers would engage with each other as well. But it hasn't been that kind of place for a very long time now. If you think about the biggest lies of the past 5 or 6 years, all of them involved laundering patently false narratives through the press in order to justify the government's commission of some form of constitutional violation. Lies like Russia collusion, hands up, don't shoot, COVID hysteria, and anything related to an election was censored. This could have all played out differently if the public square had known the true stories. All of these stories were challenged in real time by people with detailed knowledge, hard facts, and unassailable logic. Were it not for the press and Twitter's help in pushing leftist messaging while suppressing the truth, businesses would have never burned to the ground in dangerous riots. Cheap drugs like ivermectin would have never been taken off the market. Trump would have been president today, and Biden wouldn't have the chance to force his will on average Americans. These events caused deep and lasting harm to the fabric of our nation as a whole, as well as to countless individuals. There are so many false narratives that big tech played a willing role in promoting. There is no denying that Twitter has managed to make even the most insane and hysterical leftist ideas appear mainstream by deleting dissent in the past. But the real shocker comes when you realize that this deliberately maintained illusion was itself anything but organic. Twitter was not playing politics. It was playing government. Recall the story about the government-established concierge system, whereby bureaucrats and government forwarded requests to social media companies on who and what to censor. That's right. It was the government itself that directed the process whereby common sense dissent was eliminated, resulting in some of the most unthinkable and widespread violations of American civil rights in the history of our country. To put it another way, the government brazenly supported the narratives and people of one party while actively suppressing that party's opposition, secretly, behind the scenes. That's the same bureaucracy that runs our elections and runs our justice system and runs our military, health, education, and intelligence agencies. The same bureaucracy that relentlessly pursues its political enemies, while at the same time hilariously branding themselves the hashtag resistance. Hopefully, this brings home the extent of the rot festering at the core of our government and why everything since Trump's election in 2016 has been so insane. Musk has promised to reveal the nature of the government's control over Twitter's content, particularly as it relates to the suppression of the Hunter Biden laptop story. Hopefully, that information and more will be made available soon. In the meantime, the left is doing what it always does, engaging in personal attacks and overly emotional reactions. Already, there have been multiple articles using the phrase "opening the gates of hell" to describe Twitter. As many people are noticing, the left's chief complaint is not to say they are being silenced or suppressed or deleted, but complaint that this is no longer happening to their opponents. It's a tacit admission that they know when they can't win through facts and logic, which is a wonderful sign of the amazing victories to come. A food shortage could be coming to the U.S., according to experts. Drought, inflation, and new policies are pushing America's food supply near its breaking point. That's why survival food is more important than ever. Create your own stockpile of the best-selling Four Patriots survival food kits. It's not ordinary food. We're talking good for 25 years survival food, handpicked right in a family-owned facility in the USA and giving jobs to over 200 Americans. The kits are compact, sturdy, water-resistant, and stack easily. They have delicious breakfasts, lunches, dinners. You can make these meals in minutes. Just add boiling water, simmer, and serve. And right now, if you go to 4patriots.com and use code Dinesh, get 10% off your first purchase on anything in the store, including this 3-month survival kit. all guaranteed for an entire year after your order, plus free shipping on orders over $97. A portion of every sale is donated to charities who support veterans and their families. Just go to 4patriots.com and use code Dinesh, D-I-N-E-S-H, for 10% off. That's 4patriots.com, promo code Dinesh. Start building your own stockpile today. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Alex LaRusso. Alex is a producer and personality. Alex, thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
Well, firstly, I want to congratulate you on being back on Twitter. Your account was restored by Elon Musk. So how does it feel to be back?
It's so much of an honor to get reinstated less than an hour after the president of the United States. So I was actually out celebrating that. I knew the president was going to come back on after the results of the poll looked like they were in his favor. And then once he tweeted like that he was bringing back the president, I had a few members of the House Freedom Caucus tweet at Elon to also bring me back. And one of the members texted me because he was about to send a text or a tweet about it. And he said, check your account. I think you're back. So I checked and I was back. So I was freaking out. But yeah, it's actually unreal. And then a couple days after, I called for the release of the Hunter Biden laptop information from the internal discussions at Twitter. And then Elon Musk actually replied to that. So that's another thing in the first week back at Twitter.
Oh my gosh. So what did you tweet at him? And then what did he say back to you?
So I said, raise your hand if you think that the internal discussions about the decision to censor the Hunter Biden laptop story should be released to the public in the interest of transparency. Because earlier that day, he was actually tweeting back and forth with users saying the more he digs into like the communications and all of this stuff he's seeing at Twitter, the worse it's getting. So I thought, like, why not take the most egregious case of, you know, election censorship, and it might have interfered with the results of the election, because if people actually knew that and it wasn't a suppressed story, they might have voted a different way. And he responded that it's necessary to restore public trust in Twitter. So and he actually tweeted 24 hours ago that he's going to start releasing information on that, and then information on individual account suspensions as well. Communications that went on behind the scenes at Twitter in email chains, and then Slack communications as well, it seems.
Wow, that would just be fascinating if he released all of that information and people could really see what those conversations were that led to certain people getting banned, led to all of this happening. So tell me a little bit about what happened to you. How did you originally get deplatformed, and how long were you off of the platform?
Yeah, so I was growing at an exponential rate. I reached 85,000 followers, and I was retweeted by Trump about 8 times, I believe. So I was growing very quickly. And then so one day the Joe Biden campaign had this create your own avatar generator or whatever. So you'd upload a picture of yourself, and it would say, like, hypothetically, Alex stands with Joe, and it would be like a picture of me with like the Joe Biden logo. But I made it into a meme, and I did Xi Jinping stands with Joe, like, be funny. And that was my last tweet that I sent. And then 30 minutes later, I was suspended. Twitter says that wasn't the reason. There was like a theory that was like a manipulated image, and I was spreading disinformation. But Twitter says that wasn't the reason, and that I was actually suspended for platform manipulation and spam. And they did not elaborate on what that meant. But for 2.5 years, probably more, I went on without an answer. I still don't have a clear answer. But I had individuals at the FCC and the White House both reaching out to Twitter, and they said that senior executives did not want me back on the platform. No more information other than that. And I'm just glad to be back, but I'd like to get some, you know, answers for not only myself, but other accounts, because there have been thousands of other accounts who have had similar stories. And I'm told by somebody who communicated with Elon that he's very, very upset that happened, and that there is sufficient evidence backing that up.
Wow. And so do you think how it kind of worked was they had Slack channel, like a way that they all chatted, and they would post certain things about someone and say, like, should we ban this person? Because I know that was leaked, I think, in the past, maybe by Project Veritas saying this about certain accounts. And so do you think that's how it works?
Yeah, I think in the case of higher profile individuals, that's how it works, especially if it's a bigger decision. I know I've seen the internal Slack chats of the libs of TikTok. When they were trying to suspend them, they were going back and forth on policy violations in their Slack channels. I don't think that happens for every individual case, but what I can say is that I do believe, because at Twitter they have panels, so it's like this panel where you can you put notes on the account, or you just lock or restrict an account. That's how they take action against accounts. So I can't confirm this, but I would say at a company like of that size, if you were to take actions on an account for policy violations, what I think they would do was check off a policy violation and then write a note of, you know, what happened. But what I do believe, like I said, for libs of TikTok and what's been leaked by Project Veritas, for higher profile individuals, there's definitely a discussion, because, you know, it shouldn't be a unilateral decision for some random low level employee to take action on, say, the president of the United States, or to suppress an entire story. So I would think that lower level employee would seek advice from upper management and saying, this is potentially a violative content. Should I take action? They're a high profile user. So I believe that the communications on those types of accounts do exist. And I think in the interest of transparency, they should be all released.
Right. And it would be so interesting to hear their conversation about how they decided to ban the sitting president, because that would be just such a crazy conversation. I wonder if they all just thought that. And I know when Elon Musk was saying he was going through their office, he found like woke items and things like that. And so I guess everybody there was woke. So they probably all supported those kinds of decisions. But when you found out you were getting back on the platform, were you notified by Twitter, or did you just kind of see your account was back, or how did you find out you were coming back?
So what's actually funny is, so I had submitted an appeal earlier that week because I kind of heard grumblings and, you know, behind the scenes that stuff like this was going to happen. But I actually got my appeal rejected that morning. And it was for a different reason than, okay, and this is another backstory. I had submitted a bunch of appeals in the past, and each time I would get a different reason back. This time it was like supporting incitement to violence or something I would never do and never have done. Completely different reason than I've gotten in the past. So that's why I got my appeal rejected the morning I was reinstated. When I was reinstated, I got no email from Twitter. So in my opinion, it was a manual reinstatement. So I do believe that Elon saw the tweets from the House Freedom Caucus and manually requested that my account be reinstated. So that's how I think it happened, because I got no notification, no email, no nothing from Twitter. I just, a member of the House Freedom Caucus that was about to tweet in my support, clicked on my profile and saw it was back and notified me. And I logged in like there was nothing ever happened. Got no notice, no anything. I got a welcome back thing from Twitter at the top of my page. I thought that was pretty funny. But it was pretty interesting the way it worked out.
That is funny. And I'm sure a lot of accounts are going to be restored. I think Elon did a poll on it and said that, you know, banned accounts are going to be back. So what is a certain account or a certain person that you're excited to see back on the platform in future who hopefully is restored to Twitter?
I would like to see Carpe Donkin back. He used to post very funny memes. The president used to share them all the time. And he got taken action against by, I don't remember if it was CNN, because there was like a doctored video, they call it, that's code speak for meme, in corporate media, that they didn't like, because it was like an African-American child hugging a white child or whatever, and they put like Donald Trump's face and someone else on it. I forgot exactly what it was, but whoever the original ad of that was, they claimed copyright and they took Carpe off for copyright infringement, and it was a whole thing. So I would love to see him back on the platform.
Yeah. Yeah. There are so many great people like him and people who make memes and videos and really cool stuff that, that Trump really likes and people love seeing. Do you think that moving forward, Elon is going to kind of permanently change Twitter? Or do you think that, you know, maybe over time, like things will kind of just relax itself and people will just be used to having people not being banned anymore? Or do you think it may take a while?
I think it's going to take a while to get all of the accounts reinstated, because what they're doing is a manual review to make sure that people that violated the law don't get back on, or that ran bot farms and all of that. As for policy, that's already started to change. They rolled back the COVID-19 misinformation policies. So that kind of came out early this morning, but it actually got rolled back on the 23rd. But I believe he's going to start loosening policy restrictions on, like he's going to get rid of permanent suspensions for lawful speech, which is something that a lot of people are cheering on. And he's going to reserve permanent suspensions for people that spam, for people that run bot farms to have inauthentic engagement, and for people that violate the law. And he's really going to crack down on like child abuse on the platform, which is something that Twitter has been in trouble for in the past, because in my opinion, they're focusing on the wrong type of censorship. They're focusing on political speech instead of unlawful content on the platform. So I believe if Twitter is more focused on that and getting illegal content off the platform, I think it will really clean up the platform.
Yeah. And it was kind of funny when Elon was tweeting about how if there's a bot or something, you know, they would have to pay $8. So it would be a verified one, I guess. But just rewinding on your story and kind of how you got involved in politics and all of this, tell us, how did you first begin your journey? Was it tweeting? Was it like posting on social media, making, you know, kind of cool content, or what was that for you?
Yeah, so I actually just started posting on Twitter and Instagram. And then I was reached out to by Turning Point USA. So I had worked a little bit on their social side for quite some time. And then I actually started like working on Benny Johnson's socials just for fun on the side. And that kind of, you know, brought me into that universe more. So he recently started his podcast. And then last year, two years ago, he started his Newsmax show. So I'm the producer for both of those. So it really started with just posting on social media and having an eye for content. And then organizations like Turning Point or personalities like Benny wanting to have that reflected on their channels as well. So that's how I kind of broke into politics, is just by using social media for fun and staying on top of the news.
Wow. That is fascinating. Well, Alex, thank you so much for joining us and being with us today. I'm so glad you're back on Twitter. And so I'll have to hear more from you soon.
Awesome. Sounds good. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks. Aches and pains come to us all eventually, whether from the normal wear and tear of time or from injury. You have the choice to feel trapped by aches and pains, or you can fight back against it. The tools are different from a decade or more ago. Now there's 100% drug-free relief factor. I fought back with RF, and you can too. RF supports your body's fight against inflammation that is the source of aches and pains. About 70% of the over 500,000 people who try Relief Factor order more because it works for them. You have nothing to fear and everything to gain. Isn't it time for you to get out of pain? I've heard great things about Relief Factor from many people. If you know someone who has experienced aches and pains, this is the perfect gift for them. I know that my mother-in-law, who had a very invasive knee surgery with a long recovery, tried Relief Factor and found that it worked wonders. You should give it a try too. Your first step to becoming pain-free just might be to order the 3-week quick start for the discounted price of only $19.95. Go to relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246 to find out more about this offer. That's relieffactor.com or call 833-690-7246. Feel the difference. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Darren Beatty. Darren Beatty is the author. Oh, I'm sorry, not author. Let me do that again. Also, is it Beatty? Am I saying it right?
Beatty.
Beatty. Okay. I'm delighted to welcome our guest today, Darren Beatty. Darren is the founder and editor of Revolver.News. Darren, thanks for joining us.
Fantastic to be here, Danielle. Thank you.
Darren, I absolutely love all of your stuff. So we have to dive into some very interesting things you've written on Revolver. But before we go into that, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about, I don't know if you saw Kanye West recently was on Timcast and left the show. And I saw that you had tweeted about how your interview on Timcast actually had like a ton of views. And so, yeah, I just kind of wanted to get your reaction.
Yes. Well, I mean, I just meant it kind of as a joke, but it is a fact that I've done several appearances on Tim Pool, but my very first one, and I don't know what the speech restrictions are on this show, but there are very strict rules on YouTube, and I wasn't fully apprised of those rules. And so I let a word slip that apparently violated YouTube standards. And so Tim Pool just said, okay, we have to cut this off of YouTube. We're done. And we went on with the conversation, but it was ultimately uploaded to Rumble, where it ultimately received something like 2.5, maybe now it's even higher, million views, and remains the most viewed of all of Timcast's episodes. And he's had a lot of guests, including like big names like Joe Rogan and Alex Jones. And so I thought, okay, well, if anything is going to surpass my record, it's going to be, you know, Kanye West, Milo, and Nick Fuentes after this, you know, dinner with Trump that everybody in the world seems to be howling about. And so I guess, I don't know if the audience watched it, but it was cut short. And so I think the silver lining of that is that my record probably stands.
Well, I absolutely love that. And I'm so glad that it was on Rumble, because Rumble is a great platform. So yes, this podcast goes on YouTube, but also things go on Rumble. Sometimes he'll do shows that are like just for Rumble. And so, yeah, Rumble is great, completely uncensored. But yeah, I saw recently Elon Musk has said that Apple has threatened to remove Twitter from the App Store, prompting many to say that Elon Musk should create his own Apple, his own smartphone. So what do you think?
Well, I think it's a very interesting development. And again, not to pat myself on the back or give kudos to Revolver News, but you know, we've done a lot of amazing stuff I'm proud of. And the Elon piece that we did, and now Classic piece, which incidentally, it came out, there was a court proceeding, and it came out in the discovery process, I believe, that Elon's text that he was actually reading and discussing this very article, which is kind of an interesting and welcome surprise. But what's interesting about this piece that's titled Battle of the Century, Here's What Happens If Elon Musk Buys Twitter. This ran April 1st of this year. And so this piece came out before it was even public that Elon was considering purchasing Twitter, let alone the whole kind of drama of, oh, was he going to do it or not? Would it, you know, he ultimately went through with it. And then the question was, would he, you know, restore free speech or not? But this games out the entire situation before it was even public that he would get Twitter, let alone attempt to restore free speech. And so it really games out what would happen based on a fundamental understanding of what Twitter is and what media fundamentally is at the highest level. And that is that basically now people are starting to learn Twitter's not an ordinary company. Elon purchased it for like $44 billion, which seems like a lot, but ultimately for what it is, the global public square, where narratives are formed, where things go viral, where opinions are shaped from journalists, political actors. It's the theater of public diplomacy and what's called hybrid warfare these days. And that, you know, the $44 billion price tag, which seems high, actually belies the actual significance of Twitter. And just as a thought exercise, you know, Home Depot, a great company, I have respect for the company, but has a vastly higher market cap than Twitter, even at Elon's price. And yet, the question of who controls Home Depot is far less critical than the question of who controls Twitter, precisely for Twitter's unique role in shaping, managing information flows at a global scale. And that's precisely the reason why it's actually true when the regime authorities and their proxies in the media say that what Elon's doing with Twitter is a national security threat, because our regime, what I call the globalist American empire, is simply unsustainable outside of a protocol of complete censorship and information control. So it's actually, it seems like some weird exaggerated thing that crazy leftists say, but actually it happens to be literally true in this sense. What Elon's doing is an existential threat to the regime, and so they're going to pull out all the stops to get him. And we gamed out some of the levers that the regime would have to stop it. And one of those levers is, of course, Apple and Google, leveraging Apple and Google to kind of pinch distribution. And it looks like we're at that stage of the conflict at this moment.
Right. And isn't that so true? You know, whenever I'm in Texas or somewhere where I feel like there are a lot of conservatives, I'll think, you know, what does this successful person do? What does this successful person do? And they'll be an engineer or a doctor, or maybe they own Home Depot. But I feel like leftists, you know, their goal really is to control things like the New York Times and control things that influence young minds, schools, institutions like that. And so I think Elon Musk taking over Twitter is so unique, because many people who are outside of the globalist agenda don't think like that. They kind of prefer to, at least many conservatives, kind of live normal lives and focus on their families and just not really think in terms of not indoctrinating people, because we're not indoctrinating people. It's free speech. They can think what they want to think, but they don't think in terms of trying to control the debate or the stage. And so Elon Musk saying, I'm going to control it, but I'm going to give it back to the people, is really unique.
Absolutely. You know, you make a great point there, and it's worth elaborating upon, because, you know, There's kind of the typical characterization of the people on the right who don't think in terms of playing for keeps. They wonder why we keep losing. They wonder why we don't really control the critical infrastructure that we need to make meaningful advances, you know, at a political and cultural scale. And that's because you have so many people, and I hate to say it, I hate to be critical and use these blunt terms, but there's so much money that is either dumb money or weak money. And in a way, I understand that, because there's something called the pain box. If you actually step into the arena, and I would kind of mock Elon, and out of love, because I wanted to push him in the right direction. So when it seemed like he was moving in the wrong direction, I kind of teased him and said, look, do you want to be glorified IT support for the regime your whole life? Or do you want to do something that's actually glorious, that actually is of civilizational importance? And it looks like he's taken the route of glory and of freedom, which is amazing, because so few people, you know, people think, you know, money is everything. But so many people at that level of money, they're so risk averse. And it's frustrating, but it's understandable, because the broader regime has created a pain box, and they will put you in that pain box. And it is not pleasant in the least. And, you know, we saw Trump endure it, and he's still enduring it, frankly. And Elon's going to get that treatment, and maybe and then some, because he's actually doing something that's meaningful. And, you know, so much of what we see, unfortunately, is fake and performative. You know, they're the things that people kind of sound good to people, and maybe unsophisticated people say, oh, you know, this politician is really doing something, or this someone is doing something. It's very rare in public life these days that someone actually takes a real risk for something meaningful. And Elon's doing that. You know, they say, why do so many people with FU money, they never actually use it? And Elon looks like he's actually going for it. And I think that's extremely commendable. And I hope it encourages others of, you know, comparable stature to actually, you know, step forward and take a risk, and don't just live, you know, who cares about the money at the end of the day? You know, it's ultimately meaningless. Why don't people start to reach for glory again? And that the price of that is stepping into the pain box. But Elon is leading by example, and I hope it's one that others follow.
Absolutely. I think it is painful. Like sometimes when I would talk to these pro-life groups, like recently with everything that was going on in Michigan, and it was kind of hurtful to me, because we were, well, not me, but groups like National Right to Life, Heartbeat International, other groups would raise money, but it was very small dollar donations. So it was like families that homeschool their children that don't have much. One family I talked to had 9 children, and they're donating their hard-earned money to protect babies in future, donating to crisis pregnancy centers and so on. And it was so heartwarming because they care so much about them, but also at the same time sad because I'm thinking, where is our big money coming from? We can't just rely on hitting up people who can't afford to be giving like this. Like, where are our George Soros billionaires, people who are funding Planned Parenthood, for example, to really give not even where it hurts, but just like a little bit of something that they have? And so these other people who give till it hurts, I think, is so inspiring. And someone like Elon Musk, I think, like, of course, he has so much money. He's still going to be one of the richest out there. But he's also kind of, like you said, jumping into the pain box because he's not going to be loved by the left anymore, even though he made Tesla and he's all about, you know, climate change, for example. I think the left is really coming after him, acting like he's this big threat, even though before this they were basically saying, you deserve awards, you should be praised because you've changed our climate or something. So it's just so interesting how I think in order to give generously, sometimes it really does involve pain.
Well, it has to involve pain if you're doing something meaningful. And the case of Elon is a very complicated and interesting one, because I use sort of the characterization of him as the glorified IT support for the regime, which now he's moving in the direction of heroism, which is great. But ultimately, that's what all tech is at the highest level. It is IT support for the regime. And someone like Elon, you know, is a great businessman and a great salesman as well. He has many talents. But it is true that, you know, basically, Elon Musk up till this point was in many respects created by virtue of his friendly relationship with the government and with dominant narratives that were kind of friendly to the regime. He was swimming with the current, shall we say. And in the case of Tesla, you have that kind of environmentalist angle. And look at, you know, what SpaceX is, you know, people think it's this kind of, you know, visionary, like idealistic thing to put a man on Mars. And there is an element of that. But ultimately, what it is far more practical, which is they launch satellites into space on behalf of the Pentagon. And basically, the government trusted Elon enough to effectively outsource NASA to SpaceX. And so you have to have a friendly relationship with government with that. And Starlink is another example. Like, you had people freaking out that, oh my God, Starlink wouldn't be provided to, you know, the U.S. backed, you know, people in Ukraine for free without the Pentagon even paying him. So he's very much sort of intertwined with the national security state, as all tech people are at the highest level, and frankly, as all businesses are at the highest level. And that's what people don't fully appreciate, is the distinction between public and private evaporates once you reach a certain level of power and prominence. It simply evaporates, and you become entangled in so many ways with the regime that you're dependent on them for survival. And that's what provides the levers that the regime can use against Elon. But for someone of Elon's stature to challenge the regime in this fashion, what it looks like he's doing on Twitter, it's tantamount to a major Chinese business person criticizing the CCP. Now, you can't be a business player at the highest level in China if you're not friendly with the CCP. And that gives us a sense of the dangerous territory that Elon is, you know, brave enough to be stepping into, or at least flirting with. I mean, the story is yet to be written fully. But it's a really high stakes game. And the government absolutely, like, is one of the major stakeholders in Twitter, because the government uses Twitter to advance its preferred narratives, not only to advance its geopolitical agenda overseas, but maybe even more importantly, to control the domestic conversation right here in America. And so if Elon thinks he's going to threaten that without getting the full force of the pain box, he's kidding himself. But now I think he more fully appreciates what he's gotten into, and he's embraced it. And so I think that's really an amazing thing.
Yeah, it almost would be like someone who's running, you know, Lockheed Martin or a defense company, saying, you know, we don't want to go into World War III. We don't want to go into Ukraine or something. It's like almost at that point, the company becomes so intertwined with the government. And so I think it is really exciting that what Elon Musk is doing, because it's so different than what other people who are running tech companies are doing. I mean, even Zuckerberg acts like, I don't know, like the FBI bullies him. I mean, it's almost hard to know who really holds the cards, because let's say you're running something like Google and YouTube. I mean, that's a huge monopoly that controls maybe more than some countries control. So you're talking about a lot of power there. But what do you think is going to happen when Elon Musk potentially releases some of the kind of insider information into how certain people got banned and thrown off of Twitter?
I think we'll have to wait and see. I mean, I think it could be really explosive information. It could, at this point, you know, given the level of seriousness that this kind of high stakes game has reached, Elon really needs to do sort of an accounting of where his leverage points are, because, and where the regime's leverage points are, and his sort of access to and really possession of these sensitive communications and the whole, like, how the censorship sausage is made behind the scenes and with the receipts to prove it, that's a major point of leverage that he has. So who knows, you know, how he actually intends to use it. I would advocate that he release the whole thing WikiLeaks style and just have it out there for the public to see and to research according to its own initiative. But he could be just dangling it as a matter of leverage and saying, look, if you guys don't back off, I'm going to have to release all of this damaging stuff. So we'll have to see how it plays out, because as you know, and as the audience here probably knows, the latest attack includes like Apple and Google and the App Store. But that's a specific subset of the larger attack on him, whereby these sort of censorious trust and safety types intimidate brands that would advertise with Twitter, and they say it's a matter of brand safety. If you keep advertising with Twitter, we'll shake you down. It's really a mafia technique where these third-party organizations go to businesses and say, hey, you really want your material appearing next to whatever kind of, you know, naughty thing Twitter might allow if it doesn't censor. You really want that? Because if you remain there, we're going to attack you based on that. And they say, oh, no, we're not going to do that. And they cave. And so that's the latest attack vector, is this scam of brand safety, which is ultimately a mafia shakedown technique to scare companies from advertising with platforms that dare to promote free speech.
Yeah. And it's so scary because these companies are really starting to move in lockstep. They basically all have their ESG agenda. They have their kind of board, I guess, who's become woke, or at least some people there who bully others into it, even if they aren't all woke. And somehow they all seem to freak out whenever they have someone who's saying something different. And so do you ever think we're going to see a situation where maybe one company starts to trend and others follow, where they just say, we don't care anymore? Maybe it depends on when the consumer cares. I don't know if they even think about this in terms of what's actually the consumer's response, or if it really is just a lot of the powerful elite insiders in the companies who drive that agenda.
That's a great question. And I think it would have to be kind of adjudicated on a case-by-case basis. But I do think what's significant about what Elon did, it's not an accident that he took the company private. I think that's what really gives him the kind of flexibility that he has to do as much as he's done. And again, the story is unwritten, but I think it's much more difficult for a public company to engage in the kind of transformative process that Elon's undertaking with Twitter. And it's funny, you know, like, some, I assume, are good people with respect to the elected Republican officials, but I think it may be controversial, but it's, you know, objectively kind of pretty solid thing to say, is that Elon has done more for free speech online than any elected Republican official. And, you know, there's so much money raised and spent and wasted in the electoral process. Think of how much money the RNC raises and wastes. There's so much waste. And this gets back to what I brought up, is the thorn in the side, the Achilles heel of the right is dumb money, dumb and weak money. And think of how much money is cycled through and dumped in the trash, where I almost think the new model should be every cycle, instead of actually doing an election, raising for an election, we raise money, use that money to try to take a company private, and then impose free speech on it and do this like the corporate takeover strategy, like the Carl Icahn strategy of restoring freedom to the country, whereby, okay, we can waste $1 billion on an election, every 2 years, every 4 years, whatever, or we can put that money into a pot and use it to do these kinds of buyouts, these sort of hostile takeovers of targeted sort of tech companies and other companies, and use that to really build an infrastructure that can be ultimately leveraged to achieve real political power. So,
I love that idea. And I mean, the left does both, you know, they keep out fundraising us with the candidates, and yet they still own, you know, all these big publications that influence minds. But I think our side needs to have a better strategy. You're so right in where we actually spend money and where the money goes, because it's sometimes, we saw so many examples of this, of how it gets wasted, right? Like so much money went to Murkowski instead of Chewbacca and or Blake Masters or whatever it is. And so it really is sometimes very upsetting, because it's like, why are we wasting money in this situation? And so, yes, I think people should definitely maybe pool together, like do something outside of politics. That's like a long-term thing where we can influence people. But Darren, this has been so great chatting with you. I really appreciate it. And I have to talk to you again soon, because this was really interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Love to do it. Thank you.
Thanks. I try to eat healthy, but I'm not a big fan of the flavor of veggies. But I have to admit, when I'm in the produce section, all those vibrant colors of fruits and veggies look really good. Dr. Howard at Balance of Nature told us that all those colors you see in the produce section equal nutritional variety. Different colors signify different key nutrients. If you eat only your favorite one or two veggies, you're missing a whole world of vital nutrients. That's why I take these 6 little fruits and veggies capsules each day. Each daily dose is made up of a blend of 31 different fruits and veggies, and that's the only way we can possibly get what we need. So give your body everything it needs with Balance of Nature. For a limited time, all new preferred customers will receive an additional 35% discount and free shipping on your first Balance of Nature order. Use discount code AMERICA. Call 800-246-8751 or go to balanceofnature.com and use discount code AMERICA.
Subscribe to the Dinesh D'Souza podcast on Apple, Google, and Spotify, or watch on Rumble, YouTube, and SalemNow.com. Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.